Hello, everyone, and welcome to Walking with the Tenku, a podcast exploring classic texts for the modern martial artist. Today, we're continuing Chapter 3 of the 18th century work Tengu Geiji Turon, The Tengu's Discourse on the Martial Arts by Isai Chozanchi. As a reminder, it can be difficult to translate and interpret classic works, particularly through the bias of the modern mind, so please remember, this is just my own interpretation of this work. If you haven't noticed yet, we've moved into a section of the text where Chozanchi, through the Tengu, is going down the vocab list of common words used in the Japanese martial arts to communicate difficult concepts. Mushin, Suigetsu, Zanshin, and now we get to the word Sen, often translated as initiative. The word the Tengu uses here, Sen, more directly translated, it means before or early. There will be two more words at play here, go, which means after, and no, which is a possessive article. It shows possession for the word that comes before, rather like an apostrophe S in English. The first variation of initiative is go no sen. A literal translation might render it as afters before. This is a kind of initiative that you have when someone tries something, maybe a strike, a throw, or a clinch, you dodge, block, or in some way avoid the initial attack, and then respond. The next is sen no sen, which literally could mean before is before. This is where someone attempts something and you respond as they're performing their action, in the same moment. This would be like someone striking, and you strike them at the same moment their strike lands on you. Finally, there is sen sen no sen. Before, before is before. You like that? Starting to sound nonsensical? Yet even here, this is a real thing that you've probably experienced if you've ever sparred or rolled with someone. This is when you anticipate a person's action and move to act before they do. In Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, if you've ever recognized, say, that a person was about to attempt a guard pass and then swept them before they could even try the pass, then you've performed sen sen no sen. Wilson includes a footnote here, tying the text back to Musashi's Book of Five Rings. Quote, taking the initiative is surely at the heart of taking the victory, end quote, underscoring the importance of this principle. So yeah, the Tengu states that in all schools of martial arts, there is this thing called initiative. But then he qualifies it with some statements about what the purpose of this term is in training. I'll also note here that Chozanchi, through the Tengu, doesn't actually define the word initiative here in any of its possible elements. This is interesting as one might infer that Chozanchi assumes his reader is a martial artist who already knows what the term means and doesn't need it defined. The first two elements the Tengu states about initiative is that it is used to communicate to the beginner to, quote, aid his ardor and to, quote, spur him on against indolence. Those are William Scott Wilson's translation, and while a perfectly good translation, I went back to the original Japanese and chose to translate them as to promote courage and to encourage not to be lazy. I'll note that this encouragement here uses a kanji, that's a Chinese character, that has a sense of giving a whipping or a beating. In fact, Chozanchi states that if you use the concepts we covered in the prior episodes, that of readiness and relaxed awareness, you will, quote, always have initiative. He then goes on to qualify this as not a matter of striking a person first or of using the mind. He describes the various kinds of initiative that we discussed at the top of the episode as both spontaneous action and response. So Chozanchi notes that the word initiative is just a name used for the sake of beginners, to simplify the ideas of moving while not moving and being at rest while not being at rest. You may recall those terms from episode 17, which was chapter 3, part 1. Now, Chozanchi makes an interesting point about names. He says, quote, if a beginner cannot speak about the application of techniques based on hard and soft chi, he will have nothing to rely on. Thus, you give names to such things and teach in that way. When you give something a name, however, you may become attached to that name and misunderstand the fundamental principle. But if you don't give things names and leave them blank, the student may not comprehend the full meaning. End quote. First, when he says hard and soft chi, for our purposes, think of this as talking about expanding or contracting various parts of your body in the execution of a technique. If, for example, you were to apply top pressure on a person, at the moment they exhale so as to prevent them from inhaling while pinning them to the ground. One could translate this into the terms Shozanshi uses here for hard and soft chi. He's really just talking about how we use names to refer to principles that exist regardless of what we call them. When teaching new students, he says it's necessary to use terms to help students understand, and yet there is a pitfall here in that we can become too attached to a name like initiative and misunderstand what it truly means by putting it in too small of a proverbial box. He closes this section on initiative as saying it's the same with all these principles and techniques that unless a person has understood a term in a basic sense, you can't talk to them about it, and that this applies to teaching as, quote, "So if the person who would teach something does not have a suitable student, it would be better for him to keep quiet and not talk at all without circumspection. If a student has grasped the gist of the subject, he will quickly understand from what he has seen and heard." End quote. An interesting point to make. I almost wonder if Shozanshi himself was a teacher with all these thoughts on how to teach students he keeps making. This is pretty obvious, but I'd restate it as don't waste your time explaining complicated martial arts principles to students who can't do some thinking of their own. Rather like his earlier appeal to Kongzi, that is Confucius, on not bothering with students who can't infer the other three corners of the room if you give them one corner. Shozanshi really seems to think that the student's ability to critically think for themselves and be an active participant in their own learning process is very important. Shozanshi moves the Tengu's discussion on to other matters now. There's a lot of discussion as to the nature of Qi training and practical application. The Tengu says, quote, "As I explained before, activity or rest throughout the body is entirely a function of Qi. Thus, the mind is the soul of Qi, and Qi is simply yin and yang, pure or muddy. When Qi is pure, there is activity and lightness of function. When it is muddy, there is stagnation and heaviness of function. Form follows Qi, and for this reason in swordsmanship, it is considered essential to train your Qi." End quote. So we've got some strange descriptions here. Instead of taking these and working forward, let's take the description of the conclusion state and work our way back. Shozanshi describes the state of activity and lightness of function as being pure qi. When I work with my instructors or senior training partners, their skills and abilities are definitely what I would describe as more active, light, synchronized, or perhaps even in harmony. There's a lot going on here as to why they can use their skills in this way. Experience, obviously, but also conditioning and familiarity has trained both their body and their mind to be comfortable doing whatever techniques or skills they're using against me. Imagine learning a technique for the first time. The first time, and probably several hundred times after, you didn't do it right. I know with me, when I first learn a technique, most often I first do it slowly and in a clumsy fashion. Making mistakes, correcting those while introducing new mistakes, and then when I correct these new ones, reintroducing the old mistakes. In time, though, with practice and familiarity, I eventually get to a point where I can do a technique quickly, smoothly, and without necessarily conscious thought. The skill has, in a sense, soaked into my body. It is this state that I interpret Shozanshi as describing as pure qi. In fact, he goes on next to say, quote, "When qi is active, practical application is light and swift. When it is muddy, practical application is heavy and slow." End quote. What a succinct way to describe what I just took several minutes describing to you. As long as we're on the same page as what he means by qi, then really it's not so esoteric after all. Digging deeper into this, the Tengu goes on to say, quote, "Although a vigorous qi is respected, when your vigor is used with partiality and harmony is neglected, it becomes fragmented, and its function cannot be put into practice. A person who relies on such will leave nothing behind but empty actions without use. And though, when it comes to function, we respect harmony, when vigor is not the master within it, it flows away and results in weakness." End quote. So this is, in my opinion, where Shozanshi takes the idea he just applied to an individual's use of a single skill or technique, and then applies it to their entire embodied martial strategy, or game, as we call it in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I see this in competitive sport BJJ, where technical fads sweep through the tournaments, changing and mutating every few years. Someone new comes in and starts winning all the medals because they're using some new technique or strategy that was a blind spot or a hole in everyone else's so-called game. Eventually, because these days everyone can watch videos of past matches, the other competitors analyze this new person's strategy and adjust their training to defend or even exploit this new strategy. The crazy thing is, most of the time, these quote-unquote new things are just old techniques that fell out of favor for a few decades or even centuries and are just getting reintroduced. When Shujianzi says vigorous qi and says that when you don't use it in harmony, you will only have empty actions and weakness, what I see in his words is a description of getting hyper-focused on a set of principles. This may be a set of techniques or a specific fight strategy. When you over-specialize, you introduce blind spots and weaknesses that a clever opponent can exploit. The irony being that hyper-focusing can be useful in training for achieving that pure qi state with a technique. But if you don't step back and bring your new skills into harmony with the rest of your strategy, you introduce weaknesses. Alright, so moving on. The Tengu continues, quote, "Now the weak and the soft are different altogether. The soft contains living qi and performs function. The weak is simply not strong and is unable to perform function. Being at rest and being inert are also completely different. Being at rest does not distance itself from living qi, but being inert is slightly removed from it." End quote. What's being described here is just the difference between the lack of skill strength of the beginner, which has no purpose, and the relaxed lack of tension in the experienced practitioner. One, Shozanshi calls weakness, but highlights that we shouldn't mistake this with the calm relaxation of the professional. This he simply describes as being soft and hence has living qi and can perform function. He highlights this by contrasting being at rest and being inert. If you're sitting at, you know, here at rest, it can be a state of relaxed awareness, where you aren't taught but can move freely should you need to. Being inert, on the other hand, perhaps from exhaustion, is a state of so-called rest where you don't have, quote, living qi, but are instead overcome with weakness. Two very different states of rest. Going deeper, the Tengu continues, and I quote, "A person who is tense relies on qi, but has difficulty in loosening it. Relying on thoughts or concepts, you will become taut. The qi of yin becomes taut on its own, and the person who relies altogether on qi will not be swift in responding to some action. Thus, a tense or taut qi will be slow in its function of technique. But the person whose qi goes first will dry up his technique's practical application. There is yang. This is yang and lacks foundation. It will be light and parched, and will be like withered leaves scattered by the wind." End quote. This is probably something most martial artists have observed in classes. A new student comes in with all their clumsy fear and self-doubt. When trying to follow along with what's going on in class, they have a tendency to do things way too hard, strong, and fast, with a tension that ultimately hinders their ability to practice. One of the things that I found in common between traditional jiu-jitsu and Brazilian jiu-jitsu is that for newcomers, I almost always have to repeatedly say, "Relax and slow down." Sometimes I'll joke with them in an attempt to break the tension by suggesting they relax harder. Shozanshi is describing this state as one's qi being too young, too strong, too hard, too tense. He's correct when he says that this will dry up a technique's practical application. Instead, he says that yin qi will be taught on its own. It doesn't have to be forced, and that if you do this, the technical function of your skill will be fast. You've probably heard of yin and yang at some point and have a vague idea that one is light and the other dark, one is strength and the other is weakness. This is where our English minds inhibit our understanding. If we only hear weakness and think of it in a negative light. Shozanshi already tried to highlight to us the difference between the weakness of a beginner and the softness of the expert. It is this relaxed, soft yin qi of the expert he's talking about here. That yin qi is taught on its own and doesn't have to be forced like the clumsy beginner yang qi, Hulk smashing their way through techniques. He goes on to say, quote, "The person who is too damp and stagnant will be dragged down by a muddy qi that is heavy itself and will be slow in practical application. The person who is too concentrated will focus on qi with partiality and will render his form shackled and rigid. He will come to a standstill and will be unable to move. Thus, his action and response will be all the slower, like a stream that has frozen and is unable to melt. This, again, is the congealing of thought and the congealing of qi. What we call thought is also qi. The known is called thought. The unknown is called qi. You should test this out and know it on your own. End quote. This, then, is where I really need to be forthright and tell you that what Chozanshi calls damp, stagnant, in other words, muddy qi, is where I'm currently struggling in my own training. I get too concentrated on looking at what my opponent is doing that I forget to think about what I am doing. Or I'm thinking so hard about what I'm doing that I forget to think about what my opponent is doing. I overanalyze and try to anticipate far too much looking at the horizon, and in doing so, lose sight of what's directly in front of me. Chozanshi's description here, congealed thought and congealed qi being expressed as form that is shackled and rigid, of coming to a standstill and being unable to move, thus all action response being slower, is exactly what I've been struggling with these past few months. Interesting that this guy, who was writing almost 3 centuries ago, could describe in the words of his own time that very thing that I'm experiencing today. Though yes, we're separated by language, culture, the vastness of time, the nature of human experience is probably not all that different when one considers that we struggle with a lot of the same challenges. In closing, I find it interesting that Chozanshi says that what is known is called thought, and that what is unknown is called qi. A useful thing to remember when reading his work. I'm not going to describe all the psychological and physiological functions that go into why my hyperfocus and overanalyzation inhibits my ability to act and respond in a competent fashion. That would be inefficient and ineffective. Maybe, instead, it would be more efficient to say that my qi is being muddy. Though, as Chozanshi said at the end of this section, in the spirit of the scientific method, you should test this out and know it on your own. All right, that's all for today. Make sure to subscribe, leave a review or a rating wherever you find your podcasts, so as to help the show reach more people like yourself. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And if you'd like to hear more, go to patreon.com/walkingtengu to help cover the cost of making this podcast. Even the smallest amount helps. Thank you for listening, and talk to you again soon.